Yay, Friday Night Feels! So excited! Hello, everyone. I am licensed mental health counselor Patrick Manette, and this is Friday Night Feels. This was the show I began in March 2020 already. It seems like a lifetime ago. When I started, I really wasn't sure what I was doing. And it's turned out to be, as I share every episode, it's really one of the most humbling and amazing experiences I ever could have anticipated, of meeting people from all around the world who have their adventures, their stories, and usually it's all about how they've been helped by someone and how they're sort of paying that forward. And tonight I'm extremely excited to introduce to you Amanda Elise Love. And she is a registered holistic nutritionist specializing in fibromyalgia. She herself suffered from this debilitating illness for many years, and now her passion is to help others find wholeness and healing in their own lives. She is a writer, broadcaster, registered holistic nutritionist, speaker, storyteller, and currently resides in Austin, Texas. Though her work, works with women across the world, but you can turn in and listen to her extensive library of podcast material called Fibromyalgia Real Solutions with Amanda Love on all platforms, or find out more about her personal coaching availability on her website, AmandaEliseLove.com. So welcome, Amanda. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for having me.
And we were just chatting before we started that it's quite warm in Texas these days.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. And it's 97 today, so it's hot.
So where would you like to begin? Like, where does your story begin? I was researching a little bit about fibromyalgia. I think people hear a lot about it, but unless it, I think, affects you personally, sometimes you just kind of block it out. So
right.
Where would you like to begin talking about this?
I always start with, like, right from the very beginning of my story, which is, I always tell people it's my story started, I was, before I was born and stuff, I was born 6 weeks early, and I was constantly sick growing up. I had sinus infections, sore throats, drainage down the, like, all the time. It would never go away. I was having headaches. I was so tired. And I was always sick for at least 10 days or longer. It was never short, ever. Like, it was never like a 24-hour flu. It wasn't like a flu where I would just get it once a year I would get the flu maybe, but it was most of the time like sinus infections, sore throats. And I tell people, like, I had parents who divorced when I was six. Mm-hmm. So I always think that sort of plays an issue and stuff. My dad remarried, and then there was a lot of, like, trauma going on in that with, like, going over to his house and being like, I don't want to go over to that house. My stepmom wasn't the nicest person, and I got in trouble a lot. And it wasn't like I was doing anything bad. I would just speak up, and then I would be told not to speak up. And that's the thing with, as kids, we don't speak. If we can't speak up, then we're going to get ourselves sick.
Right. Cause you're suppressing everything.
Yeah. I honestly feel like, looking back now, like, I was suppressing all my emotions and stuff. Cause I remember my sister being like, oh, Amanda, don't say anything. Oh, we'll get in trouble. Now I was the one who was 2 years older. And then she had two little kids who were like babies. And so I was like, okay. And so I was the one always like having to stand in the corner and stuff, even though I never got in trouble at my mom's house where I lived primarily. And I never got in trouble at school or anything either. So it wasn't like I was a troubled kid or anything. It was just at that house I would get in trouble.
Right.
And so, like, we would have to go over there every Sunday, and it was exhausting, and the courts got involved in that. Last year they moved it from every other Sunday to every other Sunday So it wasn't every Sunday, but then we had to spend the weekend. So it was like, I don't remember, Saturday morning to like evening Sunday, I think it was. So I got myself to the point where I would be sick pretty much every single week. And so those weeks that I probably had to go to my dad's, I was sick and stuff. And a lot of times I didn't actually go out and go, and my sister would go and stuff that last year. So it was a lot of stress. I actually had to deal with always catching up with schoolwork. I was constantly on okay, I have to catch up with schoolwork and stuff like that. And I actually got held back one year because it just was too much and stuff. And I had a lot of learning difficulties too. So school never came easy for me and stuff. So I always tell people that. But fast forward, and we moved out of Arizona, and I was almost 14, and I slowly was getting better. Like, it was spread out a little bit, but I was still getting sick, every 4 to 6 weeks, I was still getting sick.
And they didn't know why.
No, they didn't know why. They just kept giving me the antibiotics. And,
oh, jeez.
Yeah, and a lot of times they would just say, oh, your blood works normal, and I look normal. I'm not overweight or anything like that. I've always been at a healthy weight. And if you just look healthy that way, then people don't think you're sick. They can't. Right.
It's dismissed.
It's an invisible disease. It's right. Conditions, right? Where people are dealing with some health issue, but you would never know it on the outside.
Right about this. And did people, when you were growing up, did they question whether you're being sincere about sick? Did they ever accuse you of faking it?
I don't feel like they did. Maybe okay. I just was so sick that I didn't. I don't know. I don't even know if I noticed or anything, because I knew my grandma. It was the driving force in all my health issues, getting me well. She knew I wasn't pretending.
Right.
The main people in my life, my grandma, my mom, my sister, they knew I wasn't complaining, because they know I have this drive in me to do a lot of different things in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was so sick, I was why am I so sick? And I was still pushing myself with my schooling and everything else. So they knew I don't have this ability to be oh man is going to play the victim and wants all this attention, because right. I'm not that type of person.
Right. And so when did you find out about your diagnosis?
I found out this was actually back in 2010. It'll be 11 years in October.
Okay.
And I found out I was 20. I was almost 21. And I found out because we went to one of the top rheumatology places in Mesa, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, you have fibromyalgia. And I'm like, okay.
And
what does that mean?
Right. Is there a pamphlet, a website?
I mean, the biggest thing I remember is they handed it as a brochure explaining what it is, which they still don't really know what it is. And then the symptoms and a few recommendations. And then they're told my grandmother, oh, she's probably depressed. Well, yeah, if you can't get off the couch, and 10 months earlier, I had done a personal training program and I had become certified in that. And then all of a sudden when I turned 20, 2 weeks later, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't work out. I couldn't exercise. I was in so much pain, and the fatigue was exhausting. I couldn't do anything. So, I mean, they said, oh, well, we'll put you on medication. Mm-hmm. And we all see the commercials for the medication for fibromyalgia now in the U.S. And they never mention, oh, there's side effects to medication.
Right.
I mean, they don't say that. And people sort of just ignore it. They think, and I'm like, well, you have to look at the what you're taking. Because you're going to, because it might be making your symptoms worse. And I think that's the thing with people. They don't realize that, or they just want the magic pill.
Right. So how do you explain when someone, because, you know, as I was saying, you hear the word, the name fibromyalgia, how do you explain to people what it is? Because even as you said a few minutes ago, there's still so much confusion about it. So how do you explain to people what it is?
I say if you can't get out of bed, like if you're so fatigued, exhausted, and you're like, I tell people it's not like it's exhaustion where it doesn't go away. Okay. Like, a lot of times I think people think, well, I'm so exhausted. And it's like, well, maybe it's because what you're eating or you haven't slept right the night before. Or how is your stress level? Like, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the thing. I tell people with fibromyalgia, it's like excruciating pain. Like, it's pain down the body. Let's not talk about like, just a sprained ankle type of, it's not like that type where it's just like you had it, you sprained your ankle and stuff. It's a pain where it's like your whole body just hurts, like stabbing. And I tell people fatigue, pain, sleep issues is a huge thing. If you can't fall asleep, stay asleep, or you feel like a truck has hit you, mm-hmm. And it has to be continuous. I say like at least 3 months longer to have these symptoms. And this thing is right now, there's some research is coming out saying it might be an autoimmune issue.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It's considered right now a chronic disease, correct?
Yeah.
But is it hard to actually get it diagnosed?
That's the thing they're closing. I've like went back to, and they don't even take people with like who have fibromyalgia, or they're not like diagnosing. Like it's hard to die. When they diagnose people, it's like, it's not the greatest testing, right? Because it's touching all these points down your body and stuff. So that's the thing with that. And people will say to me, well, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And then they'll say to me, well, I feel okay, I'm feeling better. And I'm like, well, did you do anything different? And they'll say no. And then I'm like, well, that's probably, you probably maybe didn't have it.
Okay. So what would you think that they had?
Maybe they were just not sleeping well. Maybe they had some other health issue that they're dealing with. I think the thing is the rheumatologist, will diagnose you, or the primary doctor will diagnose you, right?
Okay, great.
But the thing is, a lot of the times the doctors say it's a catch-all disease and they've ruled out everything else, so they might diagnose you with it. So that's the thing. Like, the diagnosis is fine. You could be diagnosed, but let's just get down to the root cause of why you're dealing with that health issue.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we get so stuck on, oh, I have blank diabetes. I have heart disease. Okay. What's the root? Like, let's get down to the root cause of why you're dealing with that health issue.
Right.
How's your stress? How's your food? How's your trauma issues?
Ooh, trauma, my wheelhouse.
Yeah, we could talk about, like, I say to people, well, if I could tell everybody, like, what to eat and everything like that, but then people are going to go off the bandwagon with their eating because they still haven't dealt with that trauma issue. Mm. So it's going to come straight back up when you're stressed out, and it'll just come back up, and you'll be like, okay, I'm going to have that cookie, or I'm going to have the cake, because that trauma, you still haven't dealt with that trauma.
Right. And also, do you see a lot of people, I'm also thinking with what I've seen is like with substances and alcohol too, not just with food.
Yeah, it's food, it's alcohol, it's like anything that's like a substitute.
So when someone comes to see you, what does that process look like? Is that an intake? Do you meet with them several times? Do you ask them all these questions about what they're eating, trauma history, which I would imagine kind of would surprise people thinking, oh, I'm just going for food. Like, it's probably just, I'm not getting enough carrots. And she's asking about trauma.
Well, I feel like it's such a big thing. I do a 90-minute health history just because I'm like, well, what are you eating? What is your food? What are you taking? What medications are you taking? Those basic questions that the doctors ask you, but the doctors don't go deep enough, I feel like, into like, what is the deep parts of your life that you don't share? Like, you're not going to share that with the doctor. The doctor only has 5-10 minutes.
Right.
Like, okay, how's your year been? Like, I just moved to Texas. Like, that was a big, that was a big thing. Yep. I've moved twice this year. So, like, I've had a lot of stress. But I've also had a lot of good things happen this year, too. But that's what you have, like, health experts for, counselors, trauma people, because they'll get to the root, they'll get to like the bottom of things that your doctors can't get to. And I think that's the big thing.
Right. So how do you see trauma manifesting in medical issues?
Yeah, I find trauma, like, I'm sure every health issue we have has somehow related back to like a trauma issue. Because I think a lot of times we just suppress, like we were talking about, we suppress those emotions and we're just like, and then we never talk about our emotions. A lot of times we all tell people, we'll say, oh, I'm okay.
Right.
I'm okay.
And like everything's on fire, but I'm okay.
Yeah, like everything's on fire. You're like, what is going on? Like, right. I'm like, people tell me my... They're like, oh, I'm okay. And I'm like, are you really okay? Like, I hate that word because...
Right. Or because fine. I'm fine.
I'm fine. It's like, yeah, I like to know people deeply. So I'm like, I'm not going to take that as an answer. Like, I really like to know people deeply. You'll get... If people know this about me, like, if I really want to know somebody... I'll ask them some questions that probably you aren't used to getting asked because right. I notice little details about people. That's right. My thing.
And so I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that's what makes me
special.
What I do. Yeah. Special.
How do you incorporate that into your treatment plans or your plans with clients?
I think what it does is like, it makes it individualized to that person, right? Like, I'm 31, so, like, I'm not married, I don't have kids, and I'm not dating anybody, how I work, like, with my food choices and supplements and stuff wouldn't work for, say, my sister, because she's 29, and she's married, and she's has a 2-year-old. Right.
So totally different scenario.
It's a different scenario. I feel like a lot of times we feel like there's a cookie cutter approach to whatever we're dealing with. And that's why there's like experts out there because they can individualize what's going on and stuff. Like maybe somebody needs to work on their trauma issues and the other client needs to work on their food choices, or maybe they need to work on their sleep issues, right? Like, I mean, it all depends on the person. And what stresses some people out doesn't stress other people out. And maybe we need to work on your stress level, your environment. A lot of times, I think the big thing is people might change everything else, but the biggest thing is their environment is, okay, are you living with people that are stressing you out? Do you need to move out of state? Do you need to change jobs? And we don't talk about that either.
What do you mean by that? Just like people just think it's just food?
Yeah, I think people just think it's food, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like a lot of times we say, oh, my food is good, but they don't think about the trauma. They don't think about the relationships that they have. And supplements are great, but supplements can come at the very end where it's like, once you deal with all that other stuff, because you're depleting your body of nutrients and stuff, and you're so stressed out and stuff, it's better just to start with like the trauma, I always say.
Right. So how, if someone comes in and you, through your conversations, you realize that there's trauma, is that something where you refer to someone, yeah, but you just kind of take it into your discussions with that client?
Yeah, I do talk about it a little bit with them, but it's not my expertise. I'd probably refer them out because I think that's a big thing for people need like counselors and trauma experts for that.
Mm-hmm.
But all I will work on the mindset of like, oh, why are you eating that food?
Right.
Okay, so you're eating that food because you're stressed out. What can we change in your daily life to help you not stress out about that? Or maybe we should not have that food in the house for a little while.
Okay.
And just have it like as a treat. Like maybe if you go out, then you could have a treat or something.
Right.
I hate the whole concept of like, you can't have whatever you don't you want, right?
Right, yeah, like you don't want to vote everything up. Yeah. right.
I think everything in moderation, but like, if it's not, like if you have food sensitivities like me, mm-hmm, you really should be off of those foods. Right.
So what is the correlation between food and chronic pain, like specifically fibromyalgia? What is the relationship there?
Honestly, I think it plays a huge part, but I think people don't talk about it. Like,
okay.
Food could give you like headaches, pain, fatigue, and immune issues, dairy, congestion. And so I think a lot of times we might take out the gluten, but it's not long enough. That's the problem I tell people. Like, you need to be off of this for like 4 to 6 weeks, and you can't cheat. So one little molecule of gluten could stay in your body for up to weeks, up to months.
Mm.
So I tell people, yeah, the gluten's great, but look, we have so many bad gluten-free products out there right now. It's like, if there's like a, look at the ingredient list and see what's in your foods that you're eating. Mm-hmm. But the best foods are the foods that don't have an ingredients list.
Right. Sort of like the exterior of the grocery store, right? Like the
like they don't have a label where it says total fat, 7 right, grams, calories, 130. I hate the whole calories in, calories out concept. Like, as long as you're eating food that fuels your body and you have energy, like, you shouldn't be worried about calories. The calories, the weight will come off if you have to lose the weight and stuff. Right. It will all balance out. But I think people, hopefully they're past the calories in, calories out at this point, but
I don't know. I still see it at restaurants. Like, I think, you know, right, like I was looking at a restaurant online, and I was like, holy crap, like 1300 calories for one meal. And to me, you know, like going from not being a trained professional of saying, wow, isn't there like, you know, that's a lot of calories for one meal is 1300 calories. So I think
you're still seeing
a lot. So I didn't order that one. I did not order that one. I just closed the website at that point. So what I've noticed, like, from my experiences is you know, eating different things if I'm not eating enough of one thing, like if I don't get enough protein, like I tend to binge more on carbs.
Yeah.
That's something that I've definitely seen. And then of course that leads to the crashing, and then I'm hungrier and overeating that way. And that for me, it affects my mood, that self-confidence, but also that frustration of I can't get out of the cycle.
Yeah. And I think you get in this cycle of like, oh, I can't do it. That's why I always tell people we need accountability for things in our life, because if we don't have that accountability, we're going to go straight to whatever that thing is, right? And I find if you're eating good food, then you don't have those cravings as much.
And what do you
recommend? And if you have the cravings, you're probably not eating enough food too.
Okay. So what do you recommend to people? I mean, life is crazy busy for most of us.
Yeah.
So that's why like a lot of the restaurants, you know, like drive through, especially, you know, curbside, DoorDash, all of these things. Will,
yeah.
You
know, like I magic. Did it last night.
To show up. But what, you know, so what about like people who don't have time to cook or to do really in-depth grocery shopping or who might be financially strapped? How do you guide them into being able to get nutrition food, something that heals their body instead of harming it, but also being able to survive, like financially and time?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so if you can't go organic, that's okay. Just start with what can you do one meal at a time, right? I think the biggest thing a lot of times is we get to this, we feel like we have to do all of it all at once, right? So like if you
throw it all out,
throw it all out,
clear the cupboards.
That's the thing though, we throw it all out and then once we are like so overwhelmed with everything in life, maybe the trauma issues come back or something, then we go straight back to eating everything bad again.
Right.
So it only lasts for like what, a day, a week?
Yeah,
maybe I just remember 2 weeks.
I remember like those infomercials from like the 90s where it's like, go through your cupboard and throw everything out. It's like, what? Like, you know, it's just not doable. And it's like you're saying, it's not realistic. It's not.
Well, it's not realistic.
It's impulsive.
It's not realistic. And if you are dealing with other stuff and you have kids and stuff, that's not realistic.
Right. Yeah. And I've heard that from a lot of people where, you know, as adults, if they're, you know, parents or in relationships, they're trying to make the changes, but the people around them aren't. So it's almost as if you have to have two or three kitchens in one house.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Luckily I had family who was like, well, okay, you have to go out the food sensitivities. We're going to pretty much do that with you.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
You lucked out.
Yeah. I mean, my mom did it and my grandma pretty much did it. So, like, they were the ones cooking because I couldn't cook at that point because I was in so much pain. Right. But, I mean, I don't remember what my sister, I think she sort of did it and stuff. But, I mean, like, it was
supported.
And I think the thing is, if you're not supported, you have to get that other person to support you, honestly.
Right.
But I think the biggest thing is like, well, are you willing to do what it takes to feel well? Right. Because sometimes I think we have all these excuses, like our family's not doing it, so we shouldn't do it. But what can't, like, can you bring a healthy dish to the family party? Or can you eat a little bit of food beforehand so you're not starving and binging out on all that bad food?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have to set ourselves up to succeed in life, right?
Right.
And I mean, sometimes that's things that we don't want to do, like meal prepping.
Right.
I mean, that's truth, because that means maybe taking out that Facebook time or that social media time, or doing like, I mean, that's what I did. I did some batch cooking today, so I did some cleaning and some other stuff, did I really want to do all that? Sometimes, not all the time, I don't want to do it. I love to cook, but it's setting myself up for the next several days where if I have a busy day, I don't have to be thinking, oh, what am I having to eat? It's already in the fridge and I just have to heat it up or make a salad or a Buddha bowl or whatever. Yeah.
There is one time, this was pre-COVID, a friend of mine, she was in one of those situations where, you know, like her family was, you know, little kids and stuff. So they would just, you know, want chicken fingers. So we actually did a sort of like a food swap and it was so much fun because we were both trying to be healthier. But so we would both make two dishes.
And then, that's fun.
Yeah, every Sunday we would cut it in half and then share it with each other. So
that's,
it's like,
awesome.
And it turned out like we both had enough food for like the whole week. But, you know, with life and then with COVID happened, it stopped. But it was definitely fun because it inspired me. And it also made me, I think, kind of address what you were saying of you don't want to do it. But when it's not just for you, when someone else is involved, it gives you that motivation and gets you moving a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like if you're not motivated to do it for yourself, I'm by myself, so I have to do it for myself, right? Mm-hmm. But do it for other people. Like, do it, like you were saying, I like that idea of, like, doing it with a friend, and you probably came up with a bunch of new recipes that you wouldn't have tried if that friend hadn't done it for you.
Right, and she's a really good cook, too, so I got to benefit from that. I was like, okay, I'll do this. And, you know, we had really similar tastes, but we had different backgrounds and styles of cooking.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So you got a variety of cooking. Yes.
Yeah. And then what I noticed, that, you know, kind of going back to what you said, now that I'm thinking about it, is my stress those weeks completely went down because I didn't have to worry about going to the store numerous times. I didn't have to worry about what I was going to eat. I already had the selections there. And it was homemade.
Right.
And which, like, to me is a trigger food. When I'm eating out a lot, I think it's more addictive than anything because I'm like, it's not fulfilling.
No, that's the thing with fast food places, they're not filling,
right?
Unless you go to a healthy restaurant and stuff. If you're going to like McDonald's, that's not gonna fill you up. It's just gonna
perpetuate the cycle. Yes,
perpetuate the cycle. And yes, I think that's the thing, you have to make cooking fun or have your family get involved with the cooking. So you don't have to do all the cooking yourself.
Right.
Or they could do, or the kids could cut or do whatever. So they're cooking too, or you can make a healthy dessert or whatever.
Right.
Like, so you're not doing it all and you feel like you're the only person like that does the cooking.
Right. And one of the things too that I've had a discussion with someone else about this was also like portion controls, especially in the United States. And, you know, when you think about it, when you just said a few minutes ago, you know, eating a little bit before you go out to eat, it just kind of triggered this memory of me of how many times I've had the conversation of, oh my God, I can't wait to go out to eat. I'm going to the buffet. I can't wait to gorge myself.
Right.
Oh, like Chinese buffet, all you can eat. So for me, I'll keep it in the, you know, like, the idea is to eat as much as you can. But then for me, all of a sudden, my clothes don't fit. I'm feeling unhealthy. I'm putting on a lot of weight.
You're lethargic.
I'm hurting myself. That's really what I'm doing through food.
Yeah, and it's the psychology. It's just the psychology of how we work and stuff in our lives where we're just like, oh, for some reason, sometimes we feel like, oh, I just have to have all this food and stuff. And then we're like, oh, I'm going to punish myself for eating all that food.
Right. Yep. The shame and the guilt.
The shame, the guilt. Like, I'm not, like, I'll eat whatever. I'll have a cookie or whatever. It's allergy friendly. But I mean, like, I'm at this point in my life where I'm like, I'm not going to beat myself up for having something sweet.
Right. And isn't that interesting that there's the pressure on one side to go out and spend all this money and to eat and to, you know, do all this stuff. And then we kick ourselves in the ass of hating ourselves of like, what are you doing? You're getting a little portly. You're putting on weight. Like,
you're putting on weight, or you like overdo it and you exercise too much.
Right. Yep. That huge spectrum.
And that used to be that. I mean, I used to deal with that too, and I've never been overweight, but I would be like, or I would get candy or something, and I would be like, oh, I should eat it within a couple of days, so then I don't have to have it around.
Right.
And it's this like, and then eventually you just get to a point where you're like, well, it's not good to have those things in my house or my apartment or wherever. But once you start eating the healthy food, you don't really care to have those things. Like, I don't care to have those foods, like the candy and stuff.
So how did you learn in your experiences? Because you were talking about, you know, that you found out about 10 years ago with fibromyalgia. How did you discover the correlation with that food was affecting your fibromyalgia?
I found out, so I love to tell this story, but my grandmother actually saw newspaper clippings when we had newspapers. We probably do now, but like
mostly all online.
Yeah, probably who reads newspapers? I don't, but and it said wellness talk by a wellness chiropractor. This was in 2011, if I'm doing the math right. And so he's like, well, if your granddaughter has fibromyalgia, she probably has had it for a very long time. And that made a total sense to my grandma. And she's like, oh, he sounds like he really gets it. And that's how I found out about the food sensitivities. A tested me. I had two genes predisposed me to a gluten sensitivity, highest in his practice.
Wow.
Not celiac, but that was from both parents, a soy sensitivity, egg sensitivity, and dairy sensitivity. And I've been off of those for like 10 years plus now, I guess, pretty much. Like, I have like tried adding them back, not the gluten, but the eggs, and I just didn't feel well and stuff. But to me, it's like, I don't really feel like, even if I didn't have those food sensitivities, those foods probably, I don't feel like those foods are great for really anybody.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless you could do organic eggs and stuff like that. Raw milk, and like, you really have to see like where you're getting your food. That's the thing in life.
So what would you recommend to someone? So you by chance, your grandmother found this article, and then you were able to go and see you had all these sensitivities. So those were contributing to your pain?
Yeah. The fatigue, the headaches. Like, I cut all of those out. Like, I'm saying, though, like, it took years to get my body back, like, to feeling well. Like, I don't tell people, oh, if you've been sick for 20 plus years, and I had been sick for 21 years, like, pretty much, like, you're not going to just bounce back. Like,
right. There's life, damage there.
I think life is like a journey. I tell people our health's a journey. We're never always going to be at like maybe 100% right every day.
Right.
Like, I feel like I'm at 80% most days. But at least I'm not like a negative zero. I can't run errands. I can't live a life. I can't, like, I could shower. I could do all those things I need to do in life, right? And I think that's the thing. Well, what is your life now? Is it a 10%, 20, 30, 50? And how well do you want to get better? Like, a lot of times we make excuses in life, but we only have one life, so we might as well take care of ourselves, because nobody else is going to do it for us.
That's a really good point. I had someone once ask me, we got into a really interesting discussion about this.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that they asked me was if I felt I had a healthy relationship with food. And it was such a simple question, but it almost knocked me off my chair. Because in my experience, I said, I don't think I've ever had a healthy relationship with food. And it really changed me, because I had never put two and two together. Even though I knew that I had struggled with food and weight and different things, a healthy relationship with food, I didn't even know that was something you could have.
Right. I think, that's such a big thing, is like, does this food fuel me to do what I need to do in life? Or is this going to take away from my goals? Healthy relationship with food takes time, though, I feel like.
Kind of like dating. You got to check it out. Commitment.
I think like a healthy relationship in life, like, is a big thing. Like, I remember I would go to my dad's house and they would be like, oh, you have to eat all your food. You have to have a salad. And even if you don't like the food, you got to eat all the food. And then if you have the food, you can have a cookie. Yeah. So how is that great teaching?
Yeah.
And stuff like, I think a lot of times we get our food habits from our parents. Mm-hmm. What did our parents teach us? Mm-hmm. Did they tell us to eat everything off the plate?
And how big are those plates?
Yeah. And how big are those plates?
Yeah.
And were they, so I don't remember this. I've talked to a family member about this too. It's like, well, did they soda? Kids are drinking a lot of soda these days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really remember, since I'm only 31 and I was born in 1990. I don't remember like having soda, maybe for our birthdays, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the house, but I don't feel like I drank that much soda.
Yeah, I think it was more, I noticed I developed an unhealthy relationship with soda when I started working in a pizza place where we had the soda fountain, so you could have as much as you want. And then I remember like putting two together. It's like, why am I drinking soda on my day off? Like, I needed it. I craved it. And I didn't realize all the sugar that I was getting addicted to.
Yeah, there's this book I'm reading, and it's like, and it talks about, and it's, gosh, it's called Sugar, Fat, and Something, but it talks about the whole history of the U.S. and how we
gotta check it out.
How we became addicted to all this. Like, it talks about the fast food industry and all this crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such an interesting book, because you're like, oh, I remember having that food, and it. And you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that coming out in 1997.
I remember
Lunchables. Lunchables. Oh, like, God. I remember that.
Yeah. Right. And now I remember, I was watching something. It was a documentary.
Yeah.
So when I was in school, you know, you'd either buy it, you know, buy lunch there. I mean, it was pretty typical. But now I didn't know that a lot of schools across the country are like mini food courts. Like, they bring in, like, it was fascinating. Like, bring pizza and fast food and burgers and fries. And so kids are eating this every day.
Yeah, it's horrible. Like, I remember, I think I went to a small school. So, like, you didn't get any of that stuff.
Right.
But then the one school, there was, like, a couple different places and stuff. But I mean, like, that's the problem. The kids are getting all this food, and then they get, and then the parents are like, well, you could have that food. And I always remember bringing my lunch for school. Like, I never, like, even when I was in elementary school, we never, like, once in a while and stuff. And then in, like, high school, I think we could go out if we wanted to, but I still always brought my lunch and stuff.
You know, and as we're talking about this, it just kind of makes me, you know, thinking of with mental health and with trauma, like you were saying, is when I was growing up, you know, food became a comfort. So there's kind of like the one side of like when you're depressed or struggling or upset, you would like it, you would eat, right? But then also for celebrations, like, oh my God, we got to go out to eat, we got to celebrate. And it was always like with a loving thing. But for me, it became that unhealthy relationship of when you're not good and when you're good, food has to be involved.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think we put so much emphasis on food for like different events and stuff in our lives. If we're good, if we're having a bad day, we're going for the food.
Yeah, right? Give me the cookies.
Like cookies. Like I do have this memory of since my family and me and my sister, we were so stressed out after going over to my dad's house. Mm-hmm. My mom, she would run us a bubble bath, but there would always be like some cookies or something like that, some sort of like comfort thing. And I remember that. And I still, not that it was a bad thing. I don't think it was a bad thing, but like there were certain things in my life where I was like, it was a comfort thing. Mm-hmm. Like Taco Bell or bean and cheese burritos when I was sick, that was like, for whatever reason, that was the only thing that tasted. So like I would have maybe two like lunch and then dinner I would have the other one, like that was like the only thing I would eat when I was sick, or a piece of toast. Mm-hmm. Like that. So sometimes I'm like, if I do get sick, which I don't get sick very often, like that's still not the burrito, but like the piece of toast.
So after like the majority of your life of getting sick constantly and then getting this diagnosis 10 years ago, then you made all of these significant life changes and dietary changes. So your health, it sounds, has completely changed since when you were growing up. Because you just said, it's like, I don't really get that sick. That must be amazing for you.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, honestly, too.
Yeah, that's really impressive. Like, I'm
thank you.
Really moved by that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, like, when you say that, I sometimes sort of forget. It's sort of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah, I haven't been. Like, I mean, it's interesting. I still tell people, like, I still deal with some, like, hormonal stuff. But, I mean, like, the immune system is getting a lot better. I'm not sick as much as I used to be. I don't know when I was last sick. It's been 4 months, maybe. I don't know. But I mean, like a couple times a year, I just think it's amazing where your health could be, but you have to be patient with it. Like I always tell people, I was like a negative zero. Like I couldn't even get off the couch. I couldn't move. Right. I couldn't do a lot. I just moved to Austin, Texas. So that takes a lot out of you as a person, right? And it took me some time to get into a routine.
Like, especially with 97 degree weather.
97 degree weather, but it was a 2-hour difference from Arizona to, so my sleep was off for a while and stuff.
I wouldn't even have thought of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I tell people, like, whatever you're going through in life, you can't expect your health to be perfect. Like, 1 month, you might have more stress going on in your life. So you might have a little bit of headaches or whatever. I only have, like, one headache a month, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's a hormone thing. But I tell people, you can't always expect what your health is like today to be like what it is next month. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's so many factors. Maybe you're not drinking enough water. Maybe it's super hot, like here, 97 degrees, and you just haven't eaten enough food, or you haven't drinking enough water. You haven't eaten enough food, vegetables. What's your stress? Have you taken any downtime?
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. So here in Northern New York, we see something a little bit different with the season change. And so now, for example, in the summer, it's dark at 9 o'clock during the summer. And now I notice it's getting dark at 6:30, 7 o'clock. And so what we see,
it's like 7:40 here.
Yeah. So we see a lot of You know, people think of seasonal affective disorder as just, you know, like depression, but it's also the deficiency in vitamin D. Yeah. And then it gets colder here, you know, minus 20 below sometimes in the summer. So what do you do? We're like little bears. We got to like harvest all the food. And then, you know, you have the winter weight. So it's that a cycle, you know, every season of, if you're not, I find for myself, if you're not proactive, I easily fall into those negative cycles for myself. And then my body takes the heat. My body is.
Right. I think that's the thing we have to. A lot of times we just go through the day and we're like, what did I do today?
Right.
So you have to be, I think the biggest thing is being conscious of what you're doing.
Right.
What are you doing throughout the day to like keep yourself healthy?
Right.
Are you working out? Like, are you getting vitamin D? Is there, I mean, it's going to be dark and there's not sunlight. So. Right. What are other ways to get vitamin D? Are you taking a vitamin D supplement? Because a lot of times we're very low in vitamin D. A lot of people are very low in vitamin D. So what are you doing, like, consciously? A lot of times, I think, consciously, we're not noticing what we're doing.
Right, right.
We're just eating out of habit.
Now, when you mentioned supplements a few times, how do you choose, or how would you recommend someone find a good supplement? Because when I go to the grocery store, I mean, just the grocery store, it's actually overwhelming when you look at the vitamin in the supplement. I'm like, because there's so many. How do you determine whether one is good or not for you?
I say look at the ingredients. There's a good website I always recommend, that's Vitacost, that they have very good vitamins.
Vitacost? Okay.
Yeah, there's so, that's the thing with vitamins though. It's like how do you know if you like who needs the vitamin and who doesn't, right? I would rather you getting it from other sources first and then taking the vitamin.
Okay, like healthy foods.
Yeah, like healthy foods, getting your. But the thing is, a lot of times we just take supplements and then we don't realize we're not very consistent with vitamins. How many times have we taken a vitamin and we're like, and then it comes to the next month and it'll say, you'll get an email saying, oh, your next order is coming for such and such vitamin. You're like, well, I have a lot left of the vitamin.
Right, right.
So I always tell people, you write down those vitamins, like when you start them. And don't start like a bunch at once, because I think a lot of times we just start a bunch of vitamins because we somehow, it's the new year or whatever, January, whatever, or like whatever month it is, and we get on this like crazy kick of like, oh, I'm going to do everything for my health, so I'm going to take 10, 15 different, more like, okay, what is even working for me? Right? So take vitamins that like you feel you need the most at this time. So there's a good website I like called Your Super, and they do like powders and stuff.
Okay. Ooh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so like gut health is a big thing right now with people. Right. I could send you the link. There's a hormone one, like immune health and stuff. So I tell people, like, if you can't take the pills, powders are great.
Right.
You put it into your oatmeal, you put it into your smoothies, you could put it into just a glass of water. Like, it tastes perfectly fine.
So if people wanted to connect with you, Amanda, how would they be able to do that? Because I was looking at your website and you have so many great articles, and I really have enjoyed getting to know you tonight, and you're just like a wealth of knowledge. How could people connect with you if they wanted to follow up or just see some of the stuff that you're working on?
Yeah, so I do have a podcast, and it's Fibromyalgia Real Solutions with Amanda Love. So that's a great way. And that's hitting 100 episodes in January.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah. I have a friend who from Australia who's going to interview me for that. So that's exciting. But yeah, I talk about a lot of different topics. I have solo episodes, trauma episodes, all the above. But they could also just join my email list and get on that email list and get a free sleep guide, because that's a good way to get to know what I'm doing, because I love to share knowledge, and that's right. A big thing for me.
Well, that's what, you know, the one word too that I was thinking about that sort of represents what you've gone through is your resiliency, because not only did you go through, I mean, that's traumatic, not just what happened with your dad and being in that caustic environment, but all of the physical thing is painful and scary as a kid when your body's a prison. Yeah. But now you've turned it not only into a career, but you're about paying it forward to help other people. Like, that's amazing.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you said that. And that's so funny, because I have a family member who has also told me that too, where I'm so resilient. And she's like, I've never seen someone who just keeps like getting knocked down and just keeps going.
Well, and then pay it forward, like you're helping other people. And then I just pay people. It forward.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's just my personality. Like, right. I just have this, if you you're ask anybody, where like, I'm like, they'll say, oh, Amanda's such a sweetheart. And that's just me. It's just like, I love people. If I could help someone and, or recommend someone or do anything like that, that's like, you could ask anybody in my life that has come in my life, especially in this last year, they'll be like, yeah, Amanda will go the extra mile for you.
That's, and I think we all need that. We need that advocate. And I know for myself of knowing, you know, I was thinking about what it's like to reach out to nutritionists. So there's a lot of shame, I think, you know, being a man and sometimes having to reach out for that of, why can't I just stop eating the bread or the potato chips? Like, why do I have to go see a professional? But also the ego and the control of, I don't want to make any changes, but I'm also sick and miserable. And knowing that there are people like you who are dedicating their lives to help us to be healthy and prevent disease.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We want, I have some friends and they're also into the nutrition too. And it all really comes down to is all we want to do is help people so they could be there for their family, their friends.
Right.
What is people's why of,
right.
And a lot of times it's their family. Yeah. It's not really them, it's the family.
That's amazing. So as we wind down tonight, I have one final question for you.
Sure.
What is one thing you would like the audience to walk away with tonight? If you could give them one piece of advice or one nugget of knowledge.
Don't give up. Because I think a lot of times we feel like we're stuck. We have, our life's not going to change. We're always going to have this health condition, or we're always going to be in this situation. And life changes so much. Like, what is this last year? Like, correct. Honestly, I don't remember, like, to me, like, I don't even remember last year. like, it's so, like, last year was so hard. Like, yes. I had a hard year last year. I did lose a family member last year. And it wasn't because of COVID. It was, but the whole experience, it was my grandma who I talked about. It was this whole experience of her being in and out of the hospital, and like then we found out she wasn't taken care of, and her being on hospice and all of that, and then my dog who I had like for almost 14 years died 12 days before her.
Oh my gosh.
Because of cancer. So I mean, like, you get help for these situations. So I got straight into like a grief group
right
after, because I was like, this is like, I had never lost someone that close to me before. I had lost like two grandparents, but that person was the person, right? Yeah. And I think that's the big thing. We got to realize there is help out there if we can't see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
I think that's the big thing.
Yeah, and also knowing we don't have to get there alone.
Yeah, we're not alone. And yeah. I think that's the big thing. A lot of times I feel like this show's about is you're not alone.
Right. Right.
Like you'll have someone out there who wants to help you, wants to be that support system for you.
I love that. Yay. Amanda, this has been so amazing. Thank you for coming on to Friday Night Feels and joining me tonight. And I hope, you know, you come back again in the future. And I just appreciate everything that you're doing.
Thank you so much.
All right. And everyone who's watching or listening, I hope you have a beautiful weekend. And we'll see you in a couple weeks on Friday Night Feels. Have a good night.